Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days. And good days as well.
Feel like the waterfall of thoughts. And every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala New York podcast.
And I'm Dave, your host. Pleasure to meet you. Thank you for listening to the podcast, or re-listening if you've been listening for a while. We like that. Today on the podcast, Joseph Mauricio is going to talk to us about really embracing the individual, unique experience of meditation, as opposed to some blanket idea of meditation. This was a talk he gave at our weekly Dharma gathering just a couple weeks ago. A really great talk for understanding, for getting beyond just the concept of meditation into really embracing the individual experience in the present moment. So we're glad you're tuning in. Visit our website, nmy.shambhala.org, for all of our upcoming courses and weekend retreats. In particular, our introductory meditation course. It's called Meditation in Everyday Life. It's coming up here in the fall. It's coming up later this week. October 5th is the first course. And again, if you miss this round of the course, it's coming up again beginning November 2nd. It's a four-week course, four Thursday evenings. Just an hour, you get a nice primer on meditation, have a chance to answer a lot of questions, receive instruction over and over again, really get a solid footing into meditation, and be able to take that into establishing a nice home meditation practice. For more information and to register, go to ny.shambhala.org, click on Classes and Programs, and scroll down to Meditation in Everyday Life. And now, here's Joe Mauricio.
So the idea that we have a panacea, if you will, or just kind of one way of looking at meditation that fits all is really not the case. It really is, I believe, a very personal discovery, a very subjective discovery. And we could all be sitting in a room doing the same thing. We're all just sitting here, kind of staring at the floor in silence. But everything is completely different in here for all of us. What we're actually going through, what we're seeing, feeling, tasting, touching, and what our interpretation of all of those things is, completely subjective, you know? And we try to agree with each other because we want to agree with each other. So we'll all go, yes, no, I, yes. Oh, yes, I don't like the administration. Or perhaps 6 miles south of here, oh, yes, he's doing a wonderful job. He's making things great again. You know, and everyone kind of in that society nodding along and agreeing with it. But actually no two people really knowing what that agreement really means, you know. Church is filled with people all praying to the same God and all seeing a completely different God and having a completely different conversation, you know? All of us walking in a world, stopping at red lights, but none of us really feeling the same way about that or understanding that. On one level, we're incredibly subjective animals. On another level, we're very acculturated and we are, you know, very, you know, general species, right? So there is kind of like a hive mind, and then there's a very specific application of that. And people can walk in the door and say, well, now I'm meditating, so therefore I'm a meditator. And you see a picture of that, and you think, that's who I am. Or maybe you think that's who I'm supposed to be. There's a lot of pictures now about meditation. I have been doing this for a long time, and I'm so excited now that it's becoming very acculturated. It's becoming very accepted in our world. I've waited for that, you know. I'm actually making a living as a meditation teacher, a private meditation coach, teaching in corporate environments. What I didn't realize would happen is this idea that meditation is now fused with some kind of general sense of wellness, so that it's sort of almost implies that you have to be kind of really look good in Lululemon pants. And that your face is always lifted to the sky and that there's always this sunshine in your heart and being. And that meditation is somehow equates to this sense of, I don't know, would you say, kind of spiritual entitlement, that somehow it means that we're supposed to be a little bit better, and that somehow it means that we are supposed to be getting better. But I think that that may be a trap. I think that it has to start with self-acceptance. You can't just become a relaxed person. I think we have to start with going, wow, I'm pretty wound up. I'm not saying you are. But I'm saying if that's what we are, right? Seeing that. And actually, the next step, synchronizing with it enough to start to accept it. And then it's possible, if we want to, we could change or mediate or allow things to move forward. But it's absolutely essential that meditation begins with all of us, subjectively and quite personally, opening up our own hearts to ourselves and starting to see who it is we are. If you want to be part of the pod people, there's plenty of ways to do that. Plenty of ways. But I think meditation is about liberation. And liberation is about accepting and loving who we are and what we're doing. You know what I mean? And not trying to live up to some kind of an idea of anything. Anything at all. The story of the Buddha, who was a meditator, and not himself a Buddhist, by the way. In fact, he was a nonist or antiist. And I think he just wasn't that comfortable with labels. And I'm not sure that that's the way he began. I think he very much started looking for some kind of a spiritual thing that he could become part of, but it didn't quite work for him. He went through a series of different communities and aligned himself with different teachers, and none of them quite did it, you know? And he was a yogi for a while, and he was ascetic for a while, and he did different things. He was a prince before all of that, trained in archery and any number of things, but it really wasn't until he sat under the tree in complete, I think, frustration and exhaustion. Pema Chodron says, hopelessness, that he actually finally gave up looking for something and realized that it was only him, his mind in this moment that he had to face. That the difficulties in life, the difficulties in the world were the ones he was projecting. That the possibilities inherent in a spiritual path are the ones he saw within himself. And when he finally came into this synchronicity, if you will, this grand synchronous moment of just clarity, clarity born of connection to the present moment, no more struggle, no more illusions, no more doubts, just simply saw what was here. It was so profound for him that he didn't really actually quite even know how to translate that to the world, you know? There's a famous story of the woman that asked him who he was, and he said, I am awakened. He said, I am Buddha, but that means I am awakened. I think we've taken it to mean it's an individual or a person, but Buddha means awake. In other words, he didn't know that he needed that name anymore, or to be a king, or to be a prince, or to be anything, but just awake, just present and simply here. And then she said, how do you know? And she almost stumped him, I think. But then he very simply said, the earth is my witness, and he touched the ground. And you probably have seen statues of that, the earth touching mudra, it's called. So it's the Buddha touching the earth. But it's this idea that he didn't have to explain it. He didn't have to prove it. There were no velvet ropes to get past or private parking spots to get or any kind of a social stigma attached to it. There was just me here in full acceptance of who I am. And from that, of course, entire systems grow. And years later, you have people fighting in Bangladesh over Buddhism. And that's what people will do. They'll take any perfect moment and commodify it and commercialize it and materialize it until it means nothing anymore. You know? I think somewhere at the root of Christianity was a really beautiful transmission of principles. Do we still have that, those of us that are Christian in our heart? Do we still have that in Islam, in Judaism? I think atheists have a really beautiful principle somewhere at the core of their belief system, I really do. I went to an atheist meeting recently, and I'll never forget, I thought, and they were, all they would talk about was how they were atheists and how they didn't believe in anything, and I was thinking, wow, they're more religious than most churches I've ever been through, right? Because what was happening is they were turning something that was an inspiration for them somewhere along the line into a thing, right? Into a thing we could sell, a thing we could commodify. This is my thing. I don't believe in God. This is my thing. I believe in God. And my God is this way. And I have millions of followers in my church, all of which have a different idea of what that God is, right? The journey is here. It's just right here. Right here. And it's happening right now. It's really a profound principle in life that actually everything we need is happening right here and right now. And you'd be like, well, no, but I need a home and I need a house and I need a career and I need, yes, okay, whatever. But what's happening right now? And I think unless a lion is staring at us ready to bite, that actually what's happening right now is largely fabricated in our head about what we want to be happening or what we think we should be happening. And what starts to really happen to all of us, and I'd wager to guess most of us in the room, I said all of us, but I'll hedge that and say most of us, that most of us really aren't here at all right now. And if we are, it's because we want to get something that will make us better somehow and take us away from who we are, which is a little weird, isn't it? How can you be in the present moment? How could you be in the quote-unquote here and now if you don't want to be with yourself in the first place? When I was doing comedy work about 10 years ago here in New York, I had a joke that I loved, which is, that do you ever wake up in bed next to somebody that you don't know and not sure you want to know? And that would be a little titter. And then I say, well, that happens to me every morning. And I wake up alone. And I try to get out of the house before I wake myself up and recognize me and end up on the subway trying to get ahead. And eventually, you just come face to face with that sucker, you know? You can't help it. You see your reflection in the mirror, and there you are. And actually, it was a joke, but it really came from some real practical experience in my life. I really felt like a lot of my life, I was living an alternate reality, trying to become something else. Using meditation at that point, teaching meditation at that point, trying to be something. A meditation teacher, a Buddha in training, a bodhisattva, any of these things. How often was I capable of just stopping, being present, and thinking, who am I actually? Not as a thing, not as something to defend or something to tell everyone, but really subjectively in this moment. What is actually happening? What's happening in my mind and what's happening in my spirit? What's happening in reality? I want to ask you, have you ever experienced being very sure about something in your life and having it turn out to be anything but that thing? Have you ever experienced falling in love with somebody that was completely opposite of what you ever thought you'd fall in love with? Have you ever experienced that life sometimes is completely different than what we think it is, than what's actually happening? And that wool that gets pulled out from under us, what? Wool? The rug that gets pulled out, the wool rug that gets pulled out from under us is a brilliant moment. That's a brilliant moment on the spiritual path. And it's never going to be, for those of you that are new, I'm sorry, come back and hear teachers that are more inspiring. Because I just want to warn you right from the beginning that a spiritual path is by nature a path of disappointment, a path of thinking you're going to get something and having it not be there. And what happens every time we grasp and find there's only air there, every time we see an idol and see its clay feet and have the thing crumble before us, we're forced to look just for a second at what's really here. And I think when that happens enough times, eventually we start to accept what that is. A series of bad relationships all of a sudden just become different relationships, which all of a sudden become just me having relationships. Does that make sense? As we stop identifying with the person we're trying to hook up with and trying to believe somehow because of a few little exchanges on OkCupid, is that still happening? I'm a little old now. But, you know, online dating, that somehow that's going to be some magical thing that's always going to last. Has that ever happened? Maybe it has. It's a good canvas of reality. How many people have actually just hooked up with one person and that was it and it worked? But we all believe it's gonna, still, despite the actual fact. And maybe it's not relationships for you, maybe you're more realistic, but it's other things, right? It's the next job or the next moment. It's always the next. And meanwhile, the next is being pushed by the last, which is to say we're either ruminating over what we did wrong. True story, how many people have actually laid in bed re-scripting a conversation you had earlier in the day? Like unable to sleep, going, if I'd only said, or what I could have said. And if you're me, is this the same? This is a real question, it's not a leading question, but does that keep changing to, like the next morning you think of even a better thing, right? No, what I should have said is, right, I should break up, or no, now I should get together. Or trying to create all these scenarios in our mind, which is just the frightened part of our mind that we mistake for the strong part of our mind. Fear always masquerades as strength, making you great again, is a pretty good example of just fear, I think, talking. I'm not talking about any specific thing or any political thing. I'm just talking about anything. Anytime we make something huge and big to try to believe in something so that we feel some surety, right? What if we just said, I don't know. And I get scared. And whenever I'm scared, I try to believe in something. And every time I believe in something, it turns out to not work out. Is that bad? Or is that human? And maybe instead of believing in something, here's the thing, catch this, it's going to be very subtle, we could believe in something. Which is to say, it doesn't mean we can't make America great again. It doesn't mean we can't find enlightenment. It doesn't mean we can't find a partner that lasts for our life for as long as we want. It just means we can't make those things happen. We have to allow those things to happen in our life by being open to the possibility. And we can't be open to possibility when we're closed in the scenario that we've already created in our head. Does that make sense? Life is changing every moment. Every moment it's changing. And we could change with it or we could get stuck trying to make something happen while everything else is happening around us. So traditionally, they will say that our life, which is our life, it's the only life I know that we have. We may have had many lifetimes. I don't remember them myself. And some people do, and I accept and respect that. I also doubt it a little bit, but I respect it. No, because I don't know, and I don't know. I doubt it because I haven't had the experience. Does that make sense? I'm not trying to say anything. But I think pretty much we could say this is the life that's been gifted us, and this is our opportunity to wake up. And what does that mean? What does that mean? Do we have to be skinny? Do we have to be gorgeous? Do we have to be well-respected? Do we have to be loved to wake up? Take a canvas of great meditation teachers. Dalai Lama, Pema Chodron, they're not sexy people. They might have been at one time, right? But they don't care. Dalai Lama doesn't sit up there going, I wonder what people think of me. Do they think I'm fat? I don't know. Any more than a tree does. Any more than my cat does, and she's fat, right? It's like, right? But there's this complete acceptance that all of nature has, and humans seem to be the exception to that. We seem to be the one thing that I've ever come across in reality that doesn't like itself, you know? And trees don't sit there thinking, I have a wonky branch, nobody loves me. Kids won't climb on me, right? And yet, by the same token, everything is lonely, and everything wants, and everything kind of needs to connect to everything else. Well, there's a little conundrum I just threw out for you. Nature, in general, isn't sitting there self-explaining itself, isn't sitting there criticizing itself, isn't sitting there doubting itself. But everything in nature wants, everything in nature needs, everything in nature is looking to connect. There just isn't that self-reflection that, oh, there's something wrong with me because of it. Does that make sense? If you're lonely because you haven't found someone, that doesn't diminish you. In fact, from a spiritual point of view, it might elevate you. Not elevate you, bad choice of words, not make you better, but it's a step ahead of the spiritual game to be lonely. It's a step ahead in the spiritual game to be sad. And it's a step ahead in the spiritual game to have experienced disappointment, which has actually been referred to in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition as the chariot of liberation, disappointment. Because every time we don't get our silly little childish needs met, we're left with a big open space. And that big open space could be quite beautiful, quite lovely. I want you just to close your eyes for a moment, just a moment, and just think about that. Now, you could deny it and not want to believe it and not agree with me, and that's okay. That's wonderful, in fact. But really look in your heart and say, were there times when a disappointment or you not getting your way or sadness or a breakup actually led to really profound moment in your life? Maybe other people reaching out to you. Maybe just creating a shift in the momentum so that your world changed a little bit.
Hi. So about 8 or 9 years ago, I had to make a devastating decision to break up with a really nice guy that I was seeing for about 4 years because he didn't want to have kids. And it was a really devastating experience for me. Very shortly afterwards, I met somebody else. I'm now married to him. I've moved from Ireland to New York, and we're very happily married, childless relationship. And it's just like, I don't understand how that happened or how that worked or how I moved from small town Ireland to New York to be with, is actually a childhood sweetheart, and to be very happily childless with two guinea pigs and a bird.
Maybe life is not what we think. Literally, right? That we think, and the mind has this plan, and the mind is brilliant. It is brilliant. It really is brilliant, but it's not necessarily practical, and it doesn't always know what the heck's even going on. It just sometimes has its own plan. I'm not saying that yours sounds much more deeply seated than that. I'm conflating it into something two-dimensional. But sometimes it's been said that the mind is, while it's strategizing, planning, plotting, and trying to manipulate life, the body is actually experiencing life. And that actually life is actually just happening. It's doing its own thing. And I think our plans and our ideas with meditation become more transparent. They become less something that we believe has to happen that way. And we're more willing to let go into the beauty of what might be happening. And it might mean that you have to give up some things, and that might be heartbreaking. Strangely enough, at least from this person's point of view, it doesn't need to diminish your feelings for the person. Does that make sense? Like, the beauty and joy that you might be experiencing doesn't need at all to be diminished by the loss that you may be experiencing. Does that make sense? Okay. Is there anybody that gets what I'm saying? Could explain it? If you feel disappointed of the childless part, it doesn't mean that you have to feel any less in love with somebody else, right? But that doesn't make sense.
It makes sense in a general picture, but I'm not experienced. I did experience loss because of that, but right now I'm not.
What are you experiencing?
Joy.
Oh, okay.
I'm joy at being childless.
I guess that's what I'm saying. So the loss that you were experiencing, in other words, didn't diminish the joy you're experiencing now.
No, okay. Not at all.
Yeah,
not at all.
Right. And those things can kind of coexist, or one could supplant the other, but I think that maybe there's a time in some people's lives that if they feel like if they're going to be childless, for instance, I have a good friend that's that way, and she may be facing that, and she really feels like her life is going to be ruined. And I think a lot of us feel like if it doesn't happen, there's still a lot of life that could happen, you know? And I don't have any doubt that she'll actually find that once she gets out of that frame, right? But when we latch onto something we want, then it just becomes the reference point, you know? And it could be something as simple as our weight or just whatever it is. We just can't relax. It's kind of like, your life is right here for you right now. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to work out first, and then I'll be there for it, you know? It's like, it doesn't matter. Life is just what's happening. Whether it's beautiful or whether it's not what we expected, it is what it is, and maybe connecting to it, we could find a lot of beauty, a lot of art, a lot of possibility in it. Does that make sense? Somebody else?
So before I start this, I just want to preface this with, I don't want you to think I'm stalking you, but I do have some dates I think are really interesting. A year ago,
yeah,
the 20th, right, mm-hmm. I was here and I saw you for the first time, which was really cool. And you said, behind the bar, I've got all the confidence in the world. Like, I'm like, hey, what's going on? But put me on the other side of the bar, and I'm like, hey, look at these cocktail napkins. And of course, we thought that was really funny. You know, you have nothing to say, uncomfortable. And you said something like you said tonight, like, which was, what if you would just be who you are? You know, what if you would just be okay with not having the answers and being a little bit uncomfortable with being uncomfortable? So I went home, and the very next day I met this guy, and we have been dating ever since, and I'm happy. And there have been struggles, but only until tonight, like with my partner, who I really couldn't look in the eye, I just couldn't do it, did I realize that I was so afraid of having somebody actually know me I didn't want to let anybody in. And it's kind of ridiculous because we don't know each other from Adam, you know. But only in that moment did I realize that what I was struggling, what I wanted more than anything in the world was to be in a relationship. But yet I'm in one. But it wasn't the relationship that I really wanted. It was to feel a sense of peace within myself, which can only be done by myself, not with somebody else telling me I'm great. I need to feel that inner peace. And it was like a really nice breakthrough moment because I thought if I would just be in a relationship that I would be normal and society would stop judging me as the single, you know, 38-year-old woman, blah, blah, blah. And it's funny because, like, until you have those moments where you're like, wow, no one cares. Like, it's what you think of yourself that really matters. And so that's why I come to meditation, to be able to just be at peace with me, not the accomplishments or not the disappointments, but just continue to work on those moments where you're like, everything happens at the right time and there is no timeline, and you're either better off than you think you are or you're worse off than you think you are, but you just are, you know? Yeah.
Nice. Thank you so much. That was very sweet. I do want to cop to one thing. That thing about the napkins is a joke by Colin Quinn that I stole. And Colin and I were all friends. We, before he became famous, quasi-famous, we used to be in clubs together. And he had this wonderful joke where he'd go, you see somebody down the corner of a bar and you think she's attractive and you have a drink because you're scared. And then you look at her and then you have another drink and you move over one stool. And then you have a drink and move over one more stool. And finally, by the time you get to her, you say something like, they used to have square coasters in here. His Brooklyn accent. So that was my, like, a little cop of his thing. But that's really the thing. It's like when we get in proximity to somebody, we're right there and right with them. It's naked. And it's a little like, oh, my God. And that's what we think, right? We think we want somebody there. And when somebody gets there, it's a little scary, I think. It's a little scary. I think it's always best to allow yourself to be yourself and fully and completely fall in love with that. Now, that's a wonderful idea, but I do want to say that that relates directly to meditation. Because whatever happens in meditation, whether it's a brilliant session or a not-so-brilliant session, one thing that starts to happen is we start to become familiar with ourselves. And it's the opposite of the old saying, familiarity breeds contempt. Well, that's familiarity with patterns. When we're stuck in patterns and we get sick of the patterns. But when we're really seeing, when we're really opening our eyes to ourselves, we can't help but fall in love. We can't help but really at least fall in like with ourselves, really start to become comfortable. And it is not easy for somebody to have a regular meditation practice for years and sustain these storylines of self-hatred. It just isn't. It starts to erode that, you know? And Shambhala is built on that principle, that we are fundamentally good, and that meditation could actually separate us from our pre-programmed thought patterns and start to introduce ourselves to the actual truth of who we are under there, you know? And it's never definable, and it's never easy, and sometimes it's more accessible when things fall apart. Is there one last question?
Do you think that you can talk problems into existence?
What do you think? You can sometimes talk problems into existence, and into, like, you know.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking about, like, creating meaning out of nothing and thinking that maybe there's something that you need to work at. Like, you know, I'm here and I'm thinking that, obviously, I think usually a good indicator, or I guess for people, just from the examples that we have here, is, you know, romantic relationship is usually where the falling out happens.
Right.
And so part of that is thinking that maybe there's a problem. I mean, it starts off with that. It starts off with thinking that there's a problem. But is there really a problem, or are we just creating that? I mean, I'm trying to figure out in my head, like, how that works.
Well, I think that sometimes the problem isn't what we think it is, right? So very frequently, I think something is uncomfortable within ourselves, like, for some reason, we're not happy about something. And then all of a sudden something external comes in. And the brain loves something to grab onto, right? It just loves that. So it's like, oh, that's what it is. And then we could build it and build it and build it. But usually there's a feeling of ill-ease inside us that we could connect to. Not always. That's one possibility, that there's really something, that the truth is something we need to address with ourselves. But whatever causes it, there's a wonderful saying, it's not Buddhist particularly, I heard it from a football coach, but Mike McCarthy, coach of the Packers, but he said, worry is like praying for bad things to happen. I think that's something that has been said a lot. And that what happens is we think we're protecting ourselves, right? And we're figuring every angle out. And before you know it, we're just stuck in that energy, which is highly addictive, highly, highly addictive. So it's just becoming addicted to an energy, I think ultimately because we're afraid to be alone or with ourselves or whatever's happening in our own heart. Does that make sense? I've almost said, and it's almost exactly 100% ratio in my brain, I think, that when I'm really fixated on somebody else, there's something inside me that's actually going on, you know. And I remember once I was mad at somebody and I just wanted my partner to agree. Do you ever want your partner just to agree? And if you have a good partner, they won't, right? And God forbid you should have somebody who just agrees, and then you don't grow. You're just like, okay. Right? Okay, robot, follow me. Right? So, you know, my partner doesn't do that and at all, ever. And so I was just like, this person besmirched me in this way. You know, can you get on my side with it? And she just said very coldly, like she can do, very kind of detached. She said, you know, sometimes we resent people that have successes we wish we had. We resent them because we're not doing the work we should be doing. And she's very good at this, and then she leaves the room, right? Just throws that over, and I've just got to sit there with it, stew a bit. And she's absolutely right. Like, for me, almost always, if you insult me, it's because I wish I had that red hair, you know, on some level, right? Something's challenged me inside. So really looking inward and trusting ourselves and being okay with it. Being okay if it works out, being okay if it doesn't work out, being okay with what we learn, and being okay that we don't know. These are all things that are part of a path. How can you develop if you know everything? You know, I think we have to put ourselves out there and allow a little egg on the face, you know, and allow ourselves to make new mistakes and grow. Break our heart so our heart could become stronger. A little sunshine and a little rain. This Saturday, I want to invite all of you to our Harvest of Peace ceremony here in Tshimbala. It'll begin at 2:00 and it'll go to about 6:00. That's the main ceremony, which will include practices, meditation, a beautiful brunch they're putting together, a talk from Sakya Mipham, who's just delightful. And I'm dyslexic, and I've been under these shrines for years, and I still don't remember who's on which side. Him. And that's his father. And he gives a wonderful talk. But it's just a great little way to experience community, a meditative community. And there'll be children here, and there'll be, you know, kind of a lot of energy and vibrance. That'll be lovely. In the evening at 7:30, we'll reconvene, or some people will just do one or the other, for a party. And the party will include libation and lots of things, and also include a live auction, that I will be the auctioneer, because I have no experience at it. And somebody said, do you know anybody? And I said, oh, yeah, I've never done it before, so how do I know? And they said, good, you're the one. But I think it'll be okay. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So there's an auction currently going on. Stephen will be outside. He could take registration if you wanted to come to the party or if you want to come to the evening event or both, at the afternoon or evening. But also if you'd like to bid on any of the artworks that are here. The idea is to raise money for the center. I don't know if any of you know this. Just a quick guess. Guess what the rent is here. Just somebody throw out a figure. Monthly. 20? 20 with three zeros after it. So that's like a huge weight here. So it's constant that we've got to do these kind of sexy and fun ways to try to raise money. But you don't need to buy anything, and you don't need to do anything other than the price of the ticket if you want to come. And that's, I think, in the evening. And but if you want to bid on something, please do. And if you have lots of money, you could overpay for it. And if you have no money, you could just scratch your eyes and look at it and not care. But come and enjoy the community, because it's a really fun community. And for those of you who haven't scratched the surface of it, I think you might enjoy it. So now we have a reception outside, and I'll be here. And if you want to hang out and meet each other or ask me questions, I'm more than happy to be here for you.
Thanks, Joe. Again, visit our website, ny.shambhala.org, for all of our upcoming courses, weekend retreats, and other community events happening over the fall. If you live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. But if you are in the New York City area, come to our weekly Dharma gathering. It's every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. You can hear these talks live and in person. Meet Joe and the other teachers. Meet all the great people who ask all the great questions. And it's a good time. Make some friends. Get out of the house. Email us at podcast@shambhalanyc.org. Your questions, comments, suggestions, jokes, riddles, whatever you got. I like jokes. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends about the podcast. Later.